The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Inspiring interviews with today's top landlords. This is the Rental Income Podcast. And now, Dan Lane.
When my guest on the podcast today started buying rentals, he had a lot of problems. He had a lot of tenant issues. He had to deal with a lot of evictions. But over the years, he's developed a system that has made the management very easy. Today on the podcast, he's going to share with us exactly what he's doing. And he's also going to tell us why when he buys a rental property, he only plans to keep it for 5 years. After 5 years, he sells it, he takes his profit, and he buys something else. So we're going to talk about that strategy and how it's working out for him. But first, let's take a really quick break. We'll thank our sponsors. We'll come right back and we'll meet Brad Spencer from Indiana. The first step in buying a rental property is to get pre-qualified. And I would suggest you work with a lender that specializes in working with investors, because the last thing you want to have happen is to get to closing and find out the money's not there and you can't close. The lender that I recommend is Chaley Ridge from Ridge Lending Group. She's a nationwide lender, and she'll pre-qualify you for free if you mention Rental Income Podcast. Find out more today. Contact Chaley at ridgelendinggroup.com. That's R-I-D-G-E, lendinggroup.com. NMLS 42056. Having to evict a tenant is painful. The best way to protect yourself from evictions is to screen tenants, and the best way that I know of to screen tenants is TransUnion Smart Move. It's a really valuable online screening tool delivering credit, eviction, and background reports in minutes. And their proprietary tenant credit check predicts evictions 15% better than generic credit scores. See why over 4 million landlords have used SmartMove to make better leasing decisions. Use code RENTAL25 at checkout to save 25% at tenantscreening.com. That's code RENTAL25 at tenantscreening.com.
Are you on track to achieve your financial goals? Income-producing real estate is the most historically proven way to accumulate wealth and has created more financial freedom than any other means. Norada Real Estate provides everything you need to invest in the best turnkey cash flow rental properties. Our simple proven system will help you create real wealth and passive monthly income. Get your free strategy session with our knowledgeable investment counselors at noradarealestate.com. That's N-O-R-A-D-A realestate.com.
Hey, Brad, thanks so much for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Dan.
Sure, sure. So why don't we start with you telling us how you first got started buying rental properties?
Well, back in college, I was in a fraternity, and we didn't have student housing on campus. It was a very small college. So I was talking to a couple of buddies of mine, and we found a house for rent nearby the school. So we rented a house, and after about a year, I thought, wow, you know, here we are splitting the rent three ways, splitting all utilities three ways. What if I bought a house, have the same roommates, and they can help me make my house payment, and I can be sort of their landlord in
Smart.
The meantime?
Yeah.
So I did that, bought my first house. It was FHA, where I had to put 3% down. But back then, the interest rates were almost 10%. And I thought that was a good rate back then.
Yeah.
So I did that, got the roommates. We split everything three ways. And it worked out great. Did that for about 4 years.
Now, what about getting approved for the mortgage? I mean, you're a college student. You probably don't have much income. How did you get approved?
I was working full time.
Okay.
My dad owned a machine and tool shop. After 4 years, my roommates moved out. I got married. We had that house for a while. And then one day I got my tax bill, my property tax bill, and I noticed it went from $400 a year to almost $1,600. I talked to a lady in the property tax department, and she said, well, your land went commercial. And stupid me, I said, well, I don't want a commercial. I want it back to residential. And she said, sorry, there's nothing I could do about it. The very next week, a gentleman knocked on my door, wanting to know if I'd sell my property. And I said, sure, I shot out an amount to him, and he took it. Hindsight being 2020, I wish I asked for more. And
right.
After that, it really put the bug in me that real estate, if it's done right, is a good deal.
Yeah, it really is. So let's flash forward to today. What does your rental portfolio look like today?
I lean more towards single family homes. I used to own duplexes, but when it comes a time to sell a duplex, the only type of people buying duplexes are investors, and investors are always looking for a bargain.
Right, exactly.
So, but single family homes go up in equity quite a bit. And when it comes time to sell, you find yourself after that 5-year period of keeping it that you developed quite a bit of equity in it, and it sells pretty quick.
Yeah. I mean, that's why I love single families, because you have those multiple exit strategies. You can sell them to an investor, but you can also sell them to a family that's going to live there.
That's correct. Yes.
Now, your strategy is pretty interesting, because the 12 properties that you have, it's not a set, I guess, portfolio. You're open to selling properties from time to time. Why is that?
Well, I usually, whenever I buy a property, I keep it for 5 years. Used to, when I first started out, I would buy a house and just try to instantly flip it as fast as I could. Mm-hmm. Well, I did make some money, but then if I found out that if I waited another 3 or 4 or 5 years, I would have made quite a bit more. So my strategy now, I buy a property, hold it for a minimum for 5 years, and then sell it, because
okay.
I'm at a stage where I can just parlay that property and buy 2 more properties.
And right.
In our area here in southern Indiana, it's a growing area. There's a lot of new jobs coming down the road here with Amazon and a lot of distribution centers opening up. So there's a big demand for jobs, and we're seeing a lot of new families coming in and a lot of new people looking to buy homes, affordable homes, or looking to rent nice homes. So this is a great area to live in. But that's always been my strategy. Buy a piece of property, keep it for 5 years, and then sell it.
You know, I think that's smart, too, because if you're getting out in 5 years, you're avoiding HVACs needing to be replaced or new roofs. So you're kind of sneaking out without having to do that. So what kind of properties are you buying? Are they foreclosures that you're fixing up, or are the properties more ready to go?
Well, right now, the main goal is to buy pre-foreclosures. I use Facebook. I put word of mouth out there that I pay cash. And if anybody who is facing foreclosure, divorce, lost their jobs, and they need to save their credit, I'll take the house over and give them some cash that, you know, to help them move and go forward to, you know, hopefully they can find a place to rent. And that's worked out pretty well. Most of the houses I bought have been REOs through the banks. And,
okay.
But that's getting harder to find now. I mean,
sure.
When I did this over 20 years ago, it was me and 2 other old guys on a courtyard steps bidding on houses. Now with all these TV shows about flipping houses and everything, it's flooded the market quite
absolutely.
A bit.
Absolutely. Now, with selling your properties, I mean, this is something that crosses my mind from time to time. I own a few properties that have seen some pretty good appreciation over the last couple of years. And I think about kind of doing what you're doing, taking that property, selling it, taking the appreciation, and, you know, you can buy 2 properties with the appreciation. But what stops me from doing it is thinking, gosh, you know, maybe in 10 or 20 years, who knows what's going to happen? It might appreciate even more. Does that ever cross your mind that maybe you're leaving money on the table?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a gamble. I mean, speculation that you're doing, and you're hoping that, you know, the whole thing is trying to time the market.
Yeah.
And
it's always
sometimes that works out good. Sometimes it doesn't work out good. But what I look for is bad homes and good neighborhoods. I don't look for good homes and bad neighborhoods because that never works out.
Right.
So sometimes that's a needle in a haystack to try to find. But if you have a good system, and if you live in a small town like I do, work can get out and people will help you. A lot of times I pay finder's fees. You pay somebody $500 if they can help me find a house that it's not on the MLS system or not on the market.
Right.
And that's worked out pretty well.
Now, one of the reasons I wanted to have you on the show today is you've done a really good job of setting up systems to manage your rental properties. Now, you've got a full-time job today, right?
That's correct.
And you've got your properties. How much time do you think you spend in a typical month managing your rentals?
I would say no more than 5 or 10 hours.
Okay.
It's very minimal. I have a pretty good system.
Yeah. So let's talk through it. So a couple of the things that you've mentioned to me before we started recording here is that 98% of the problems that you're going to have as a landlord can be avoided if you pick the right tenants.
That's correct. So, I wholeheartedly believe that.
Yeah. So talk to me about this. Like, what are you looking for? Like, what's a perfect tenant?
Well, the main goal is to have a system in place from the start to beginning. And after reading several books, I developed a system where I put a sign in the yard. I don't put my personal phone number on it. I have a separate answering machine that answers their calls because I don't want somebody calling me all the time mm-hmm. about a house.
Right.
So when a person calls that number, every answer machine you buy, you have 2 minutes to leave a message. So within that 2 minutes, I leave a message about the house. Thank you for calling my business. The house you're calling about, 3 bedrooms, 2 bathrooms, located in a great area. If you're interested in this house, you must be in good standings with your landlord. If you're renting now, you must not have any convictions of any type of drugs, sexual assault, batteries, or anything like that. I make it as strict as I can because the goal is to weed out the possible bad tenants and find the good ones.
Right.
Now, in saying that, I leave the applications at that property in the mailbox, and then I give specific instructions on that back sheet on that application about how to get it back to me, and that's either by email or by fax, or they can bring it by my company. So people act different when they think they're dealing with a business than with an individual.
Yeah.
So I go after that perspective. And in that application, I ask very specific questions about if they have any type of convictions. Again, who is their landlord they're renting from now? What is his phone number? Because I will be calling him.
Mm-hmm.
And I receive out of maybe 50 phone calls I probably get about 5 applications.
Okay.
And that's good. Because that really narrows it down for me.
And so the primary way that you're finding tenants is the sign in the yard. Like, are you doing any kind of online advertising?
I am. I'm doing. I do Facebook. I do word of mouth.
Okay.
I do. My son's on different types of social media. It helps me out too. And really, it doesn't. Again, in this area, there's a big demand to rent nice homes, and I never have a problem finding a good renter.
Right. Now, once you've actually selected them, you were telling me that you treat your tenants like employees versus treating them like a lot of landlords might try to treat them like
yes.
customers, but you think it's better to treat them like an employee.
Right. A gentleman I know named Mike Butler wrote a great book about being a landlord. And one of the first questions he asked in there is, who is the customer? Of course, naturally, you think, well, whoever's renting the place. Then he put it in this perspective. He said, imagine you had a $300,000 Ferrari and you're renting that car to somebody for $100 a week. Who's the customer then? And so that made me think, wow, I'm trusting somebody with a house, a $150,000 house. I'm trusting them to make me payments on time, to keep the place up nice, not to get arrested, and make sure that all the bills are paid.
Mm-hmm.
So when you put it in that perspective, I realize that I'm the customer, and this person renting from me
right.
is working for me.
Right.
And we need to be working together to make one, to make sure that he keeps the place up nice, that he is happy, his family's happy, and that the neighbors are happy.
Becoming friendly with the neighbors is part of your strategy, right?
Oh, absolutely. When I first buy a house, of course, it always needs some type of fixing up, and either mostly cosmetic. I get my guys in there and they paint. They do landscape and they do a lot of things to get the house up right, which can take about a month to do that. In the meantime, I'm going to about three or four different neighbors, asking them about the house, who lived there before. And you'd be surprised how friendly. I've never had an angry neighbor turn me down about wanting to help me keep an eye on my property.
Yeah.
They will call you about anything that they don't seem that's normal, that's out of the normal. They will call me and make sure I know about it. And I'm always grateful when they call. Very friendly.
Yeah.
And your neighbors can be your best friend when you're a landlord, because they will tell you everything.
Now, can that be a double-edged sword where maybe they're calling you too much or calling you about stuff that's really not that big of a deal?
Yeah, that happens, but it's very minimal, and it's definitely worth them calling and bugging me sometimes than them not calling at all when something goes wrong.
Sure. Tell me what you're doing to make sure you always get paid on time.
Well, my rent payment's always due on the 7th of the month, and because that's easy for me to remember, and 7's a lucky number.
Uh-huh.
I put incentives in my contract. One, I give $10 off if one, they pay ahead of time, and they do all minor maintenances. For instance, they got a clogged toilet or something in the landscaping needs to be fixed. If they can take care of that, I'll give them $10 a month off rent.
Okay.
And nearly every one of them takes advantage of that.
Yeah.
So it's worked out great.
Yeah. You know, I like that. Instead of a penalty, you're kind of making it a positive, you know, and I think positive reinforcement works good. Now, what if they pay after the 7th? Like, do they have, is there ever a late charge, or do they
There's a $10 per day late charge I charge.
Okay. Okay.
And then after that 10th day of being late, then the eviction process starts.
And
again, that's stated specifically in the contract. And of course, that contract is everything. I mean, everything.
Yeah.
You have to, the old saying, the devil's in the details. And so you want everything spelled out in that contract, specifically what happens when an incident comes up.
Right. Now, as far as your relationship with the tenants, you found that if you go over to the property and do the repairs yourself, that the tenants will look at you differently?
Yes. Anytime they call, unless it's a dire emergency, I never go there. I call one of my guys, or if it's a heating and cooling, I call a company, same as a plumbing. Because once you start going there and doing the repairs yourself, your tenants will look at you differently.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it goes back to who's the customer.
Right.
They look at themselves as a customer, and they look at you working for them. And then while you're there, they'll bring up two or three or maybe four other things that maybe is not necessarily needing repair, but something they'd like for you to do. So you really don't want to get caught in that trap. As much as you can, you want to form out that work to somebody else.
Yeah, that's really good advice. Yeah, the second you start giving them that window to point out things, they're going to be telling you all kinds of things that maybe aren't really issues.
Exactly.
Yeah. So that's awesome. So it seems like you're treating this like a business. You're being firm with your tenants. Do you ever have any problems? Like, or because of the way that you're running things, does everything tend to go pretty smoothly?
Now it goes pretty smooth, but towards the beginning, I had evicted so many people that the small claims judge knew me by name.
Wow!
So that was a lot of trial and error and things I was doing wrong, and just running out to the first people who showed up and not doing background checks and understanding that they are part of this business too.
Yeah.
One of the last houses I rented to, I was showing to a young family, and the husband looked at me and started nitpicking the house little bitty things. And I looked right back at him. His name was Tony. I said, Tony, I'm going to tell you something. I got 13 other applicants that are interested in renting this house. He was trying me.
Right.
And
right.
I'm not saying all renters are like that. And I don't mean to sound very strict as I am, but you're running a business.
Yeah.
And your tenants are part of that business.
So
but they need to understand that you're not at their beck and call.
Did you end up renting to him?
No.
Okay.
Yeah. No. You know, after that episode, I never give an answer if they got the house when they first look at it. I shake their hands and I say, well, I got some other applicants to look through and I'll get back with you.
Yeah. I mean, someone like that just sounds like they're going to be trouble.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. So in the beginning, you said you had a lot of evictions. Is it just now that you're screening better where you weren't screening in the early days?
I'm screening better and I got a better contract.
Okay.
And the applications, I have a very strict application when they fill it out that weeds a lot of bad tenants out.
Yeah.
The ones that they're in bad standings with their landlords, they've just gotten out of jail, things like that.
Yeah.
And that weeds a lot of them out.
Now, tell me about you had an eviction where the tenant got really mad at you. And ended up flooding the property. Tell me what happened there.
I had a gentleman who wasn't happy about being evicted, left the water on in the bathroom sink, overflow the sink onto the hardwood floor and to where it rotted out the subfloor and part of the joist, and it sunk my cast iron tub into the into the ground. So wasn't very happy about that.
That sounds like a major repair job. How much did that end up costing you?
That was about $500.
That's it? Wow. Okay.
Yeah, that's about $500. Yeah.
Well, it sounds like you made off pretty good with that.
I got lucky. I mean, again, I got a great group of guys. We work together as a team. They know what's expected. And I keep them busy all the time.
Yeah.
So
now, in addition to your rentals, you also own a commercial building.
That's correct.
How is that different? Like having a commercial building, is there much difference, or is it really kind of the same thing?
It's a little bit of the same, but the big difference is exposure. You rent a commercial building. For instance, I rent to King Donuts in Charlestown. A lot of customers walking in and out and a lot of wear and tear going on.
Yeah.
So again, a lot of exposure. You got public bathrooms in there that's being used. Sometimes they get the toilets get clogged. So it's a lot of usage. So that's quite a bit different than the residentials.
Right. The one thing that's always made me leery of commercial is vacancy. That, you know, if I have a rental unit that's vacant, you know, I can usually get it filled in like a couple of days or a week maybe. But with commercial properties, they seem to sit empty for, in some cases, years, like depending on the location.
Yes.
Has that been an issue at all where you've just had really long vacancy?
Finding the right tenants can be difficult, like you said earlier about possibly it could sit vacated for years. That's a very good possibility.
Sure. Well, I guess in that case, I'm going to go ahead and stick with residential rentals. Brad, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I appreciate it. And thank you so much for listening. If this is your first time here, make sure you subscribe. We release new episodes every single Tuesday. And if you subscribe, you will get them delivered automatically. Before we wrap things up, I want to take a second and thank our sponsor today. It's Chaley Ridge from Ridge Lending Group. She's a nationwide lender, and she specializes in helping investors buy rental properties. So whether you want to buy your very first property, or if you've got a big portfolio and you're having trouble getting financing, Chaley has a lot of different loan programs, and she can find something that'll work for you. You can find out more and get started today. Just go to ridgelendinggroup.com. That's RIDGE, lendinggroup.com. And if you mention Rental Income Podcast, she will waive all of the pre-qualification fees. NMLS 42056. My name is Dan Lane, and you've been listening to the Rental Income Podcast.